Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to learn how we can change the outcome, in this case of menopause, by managing it with adaptogens. Now, I did a study, the largest study of its kind ever done, a clinical study lasting a year with 500 women, all of whom were in menopause. At the end of the study, 97% of all of the symptoms that they had been suffering from hot flashes to thinning of the skin, thinning of the eyebrows, thinning and losing hair, were all reversed. Libido came back, passion came back, the thickening of and more healthy, lubricated vaginal lining came back. Things you don't think about. A man wouldn't understand that because it's not their body. But for a lot of women, it makes it very difficult to try to have a normal life when so many things are happening, like gaining weight, and yet you're not overeating. You're on a strict diet. You still can gain weight because your metabolism changes. How do we help all of those tens of millions of women? Well, I'm going to share that today. And interesting, because a lot of what I'm sharing today is based upon new information. Now, this study was about 15 years ago. But this is what Dr. Julius Gope is sharing. So the other clinicians in the field are finally catching up, which is good. And when this becomes common knowledge, when every woman knows what Dong Quai is, the most commonly used herb in the world, or Siberian ginseng, and how to use it to help their hormones. Also today, new information about how Linus Pauling was right. And yet he was attacked mercilessly. America's only twice winner of the Nobel Prize unshared, and yet he was considered having gone to the fringe. And yet he won the Nobel Prize in 1954 in chemistry. Interesting article that he did called The Nature of the Chemical Bond and the Structure and Molecules of Crystals. Whole lot Linus Pauling did that people are not aware of. One of the most cited scientists in history. And yet, when he embraced vitamin C and showed how it could work to prevent colds and flu or lessen their duration and how it worked with cancer. And I won't forget the time that he came because he was a professional friend. Every time he was in New York, he'd come by the office or the laboratory where I worked. And I said, I'm going to try something. He said, what's that? I said, I'm going to give myself vitamin C intravenous at high doses. At that time, the highest dose that we're aware that was ever given was 50,000 milligrams given by Dr. Frederick Klenner down in Reesville, North Carolina. And that was considered extreme. And he said, why would you give that huge amount? He believed about 18,000 milligrams. I said, because I've never really been sick. I don't smoke. I've never smoked or drank or taken drugs. I eat a healthy diet. I exercise. So the question is, what will it do for a person like me who has a very healthy immune system? Because then I can get an idea of how it might be able to help a person who has various types of illness, doesn't have the same strength of immune system. He thought it was an interesting hypothesis. We discussed it. And so I started. And over a period of 6 months, I started at 25,000 for a week, then went to 50,000 and went up. And I got to 100,000. No one had ever gotten 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And I was getting it every day because I was, well, I was at the Tri-State Healing Center. And the first Tri-State Healing Center is in the brownstone where I lived. I lived on the third and fourth floor. And the first floor was the studio. And the second and third, fourth and fifth floor. And the first and second floor was the Tri-State Healing Center. It was packed. And all day long, I was running up and down the steps answering the doctor's questions. And so I just go down and get it hooked up. And I can't tell you how many times I was doing my radio show with an IV drip in my vein and my blue and gold McCall sweetie on my shoulder. Always quiet, never made a sound. And so then I would measure myself. And every 2 weeks, I'd get my full blood taken, and I started to see what this was doing to all the different immune modulators. It was supercharging them. I mean, really charging them. It'd be like going into turbo drive and before you were driving a four-cylinder car. And it was just phenomenal. In fact, it got to a point where I could, my need for sleep lessened tremendously. I'm not recommending this to anyone. I'm just giving you some examples myself. And I was around patients who were sick all the time, no masks, no gloves. I didn't want people to feel that somehow because they had AIDS, defining illnesses, that it was infectious, because it wasn't infectious. That's one of the myths, thanks to Anthony Fauci and others, that they spread to stigmatize people. In any case, never got sick. And then after a year of doing this on myself and having all the blood chemistries and seeing the impact, then I started ramping up the protocols for people. And lo and behold, breast cancer stage 4 reversed, lung cancer stage 4 reversed. All these diseases began to be reversed. I should have done a study. I didn't. But then every single one of the people with AIDS, 1,200 people, not one died. They all got better. But 18 of them actually reversed their AIDS. And there's a documentary, from what I understand, it's being filmed right now. I'm not in it. I'm told from some of the doctors who've been filmed that they want to know what exactly was the protocol and how did it work and what's the scientific validation. Well, it's interesting. There's nothing in the scientific literature to validate it to. There was no one doing any of this stuff anywhere in the world that I was doing, and yet we got the results. More on that. A lot more on that. You'll be able to see in about 2 weeks. So that's coming at you. In any case, there's an awful lot that we need to do now to prevent disease that we know we can do because we've done it, and we just have to trust that nature didn't make mistakes with onions and garlic and apples and oranges and all the other wonderful functional foods that we have. And we have to start looking at the foods as functional foods. A hot dog is a death food. Pizza is a death food. Sugar is a double death food. And yet that's what people are told to eat. Television, doctors, nurses, hospitals, surgeon general. And there's no irony that they're doing everything ass backwards. Anyhow, we're going to deal with that on today's show. Also today, since some of you did not have a chance yesterday to hear the latest investigative reporting article, and this was entitled, Will the COVID Vaccine Meet the Promises? It's really probing because in here we give you the latest British Medical Journal report from this week, and it dissected the claims that were in the headlines of the New York Times and all the other papers, 95% efficacy. And the editor, senior editor, comes up with, no, there's no science backing this up. And in fact, he's reporting here that it could be as low as 29% efficacy, 29%. And even that figure could be too high based upon using the PCR to determine the outcome. So go to prn.fm and download that article. It's very important. It also shows you what we think we're getting when we're getting the vaccine, they never test it. It's not true. Oh, I'll take the COVID vaccine and I won't get COVID. Wrong. No study. They never did that. That was not a part of what they were doing. But if I take the COVID vaccine, I can't then get infected from other people or infect other people. Wrong, wrong. Well, certainly I won't get seriously ill and end up in a hospital. Wrong again. So everything you've been told is a lie. And that's unfortunate. Anyhow, that's some of what we're going to be dealing with today. Also today, we're going to start pushing back against the scientific Napoleon, and that's Anthony Fauci. Dr. David Martin and Robert F. Kennedy, just this Tuesday, held a webinar, 2 hours long. I went through it. I selected some clips that are factual that challenge them. And you remember that the woman, and again, this is some gravitas. It's a very good platform where they do from what is called WION, W-I-O-N. Well, they interviewed a woman, and they grilled her. There were no softball questions, and they challenged her. Well, Facebook penalizes them for having her on. Censorship. So now a legitimate credentialed journalist is not allowed to interview anyone that Facebook or Google or Twitter deems on the wrong side of an equation. You're not allowed to criticize anything in the establishment. And that's just the beginning. Later today, I'm going to do a commentary with Richard Yale on book burnings. They're back and changing books that have historically been important guides to let us understand human nature. And a school teacher is proud that she's banned the Iliad. And really? Did you actually read it? Do you have the intellect to understand any of the writings of Homer? I doubt it. You're part of the woke generation, and that's the dumbest generation, the most stupid and vile minds I've ever seen. And you're going to ban books that you can't understand for what reason and you don't know? And now it becomes a flash fire. Ban this book. Don't read this book. But read the most racist book since Mein Kampf, Hitler's book. Guaranteed to cause tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of Americans to begin to get really angry at being called racist just because they're Caucasian. And that's the entitlement book that's now being demanded in curriculums. So you see, we're starting a new year on the wrong foot on all levels. So we, this audience, which is no small audience, let's try to at least look at the lessons we can learn and share wherever appropriate or open to other people wanting that information so that they don't start off wrong in the new year. Now, to help the women in this audience and the men, because I'm going to do a segment on andropause, men's menopause, just want to share some of the latest things. If you've been taking the synthetic horse-derived hormone drugs like Premarin, P-R-E-M-A-R-I-N, or Prempro, P-R-E-M-P-R-O, I would suggest you look at all the scientific literature showing that these are deadly, deadly side effects. You would be better off eating rat poison. First, because the fact that they can turn off some hot flashes, well, that's relatively easy to do, and you don't have to harm yourself. It increases the risk of heart attacks, strokes, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. 6 negative outcomes and 13% minimum of the 10 million women using it. And yet, that's what's being advocated. Here is what we would suggest instead. First and foremost, if you want to help your hormones rebalance, stop eating anything that's too acidic or pro-inflammatory. That means alcohol in any amount, sugars in any amount. I'm talking about processed sugars, not naturally occurring sugars from fruits. And also, then get rid of the highly processed pro-inflammatory cytokine-causing agents like meat, chicken, fish, and anything that's browned, potato chips, French fries, pizza crusts, all right? Because those create either heterocyclic amines, which are extremely damaging to your cells, and you shouldn't have those. So that's the first thing you can do. Then start to drink a lot of green juices. I suggest celery, cucumber, green apple, lemon, and ginger. For women, that would be your best combination juice to have in the morning, 16 ounces. And then later in the day, you should have a pomegranate. Yeah, just now, if you can't find pomegranates, they're in season now, by the way. Pomegranates, fresh, great. Frozen, fine. Concentrate, also good. 2 tablespoons of the concentrate. But then put 2 tablespoons of blueberry concentrate or a pint of blueberries. And also strawberries, same thing. And that will help you also. Then use some herbs. The herbs I would suggest would start with one of the best. It's called maca, M-A-C-A. It's a root. And it has potent anti-menopausal effects. It's also called lepidium, L-E-P-I-D-I-E-I-U-M, E-L-E-P-I-D-I-U-M. And it's clinically proven to be one of the best adaptogens you can find. And it's native to South America. In fact, almost 87% of women reported positive improvements in relieving menopausal symptoms, including hot flashes, fatigue, night sweats, and mood swings, using this simple protocol. Also, maca operates differently than other therapeutic protocols. Its optimal function is with the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or what is called the HPA axis. This complex set of structures originates within the brain, and it governs the endocrine, which is your hormone system. And it gives you really good quality energy to the ovaries, the thyroid, and the adrenal glands. So you have hormonal support to create more energy, vitality, especially as energy and vitality wane during going through menopause. So those are some of the things that are important right off the bat. Also, there are a lot of other good ones. And by the way, maca's harvested about 12,000 feet in remote central highlands of the Andes. And it's been used for as long as people have been living in that area. There's 53 different components that they found, the phytonutrients in there. It is also antimicrobial and is very powerful. It has antioxidant capabilities, which is good, which helps and also induces protection of your liver. So for those of you who've had hepatitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, or any form of alcohol-induced liver problems, or maybe you've had too much sugar and you have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, it helps there as well. So there's lots of study on it. Also, it enhances fertility. That's good. And so it is one of the, if not the most important herb. And then I would add other herbs to that. But today I just want to focus on a protocol that's easy for most people to get. I have about 20 other herbs I would recommend, including Dong Quai. But today, just that one. Now, I mentioned blueberries a moment ago. And one of the things we should know about blueberries, and there's a lot of good science on blueberries, it's an absolute powerhouse. Again, it's rich in vitamin C. It also has resveratrol in it, which is good for your heart and your arteries. It's a rich source of the flavanols, and one specific type of flavonoid, excuse me, called anthocyanidins, and it also has tannins. These are all good. But what happens when you eat a blueberry? Well, there's several things that happen. It helps your brain. It protects your brain in a good way. And the compounds in blueberries are able to turn off inflammation in your arteries, your heart, your brain, your eyes. So it's good for all this. It protects from a lot of injuries by exerting antioxidant, anti-inflammatory effect. So if you're an athlete, you definitely should have blueberries because it protects your joints. And it also has been shown to protect against loss of brain cells. And that's a big deal because that means with less cells, you are going to have an impairment in memory, learning, and coordination. Blueberries also help nerve cells. And with better communication between each nerve cell through the process known as signal transduction. So you're simply going to be quicker. Your brain will think quicker. You'll be able to react quicker. And as I mentioned, these are also containing antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. They enter the brain and where they lodge in the striatum, a specific area controlling certain types of memory and motor function. And the striatum is also predominantly involved in Parkinson's disease. So anyone that I'm working with Parkinson's, in fact, there was a gentleman named Thomas. He was an engineer, 70 years of age, African-American, and he had very severe Parkinson's. Now, fortunately, we filmed everyone in our brain aging study. This goes back about 12 years ago. And his hands were shaking. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't hold a fork or spoon. He couldn't brush his teeth. Everything he had to have done for him because of this. At the end of the study, which was 16 months, his hands were steady, had no tremors at all. And then he told me that he had a side effect. And I said, what's the side effect? He said, I've got acute memory. I said, I'd never heard the term acute memory. He said, yes. He's asked me a question. I asked him, how many students were in his high school class? He named them. He said, 22. How many of their first names can you remember? He remembered every single first and last name. Could you do that? He did. So that's the side effect. And he was taking a lot of blueberries. He said, I really love blueberries. Am I taking too much? I said, well, how much are you taking? So I took a quart today. I said, no, you're going to have a great, you're going to have a great intestinal flow with all those blueberries, because it's a very soft fiber, a good and healing fiber, but it's all those anti-sedatives. So remember, blueberries are just a super food, and partly it's because of the dark color. Those are protective antioxidants in there. And it is known to help extend the lifespan, so you know, it protects brain regions from injury, and it also helps us live a longer life. So those are just a few of the things that can help us in our day-to-day lives. And I'd rather do more information on fewer topics when it comes to health, so we get more of like a classroom on the air. So that's our classroom on the air today on blueberries. Now, before we go off here onto a break and come back to talk about book burning and the new woke generation that has power within the educational system and the body politic completely now, so just imagine, today we now have only one government. There's no checks and balances. Now, I don't care. It's irrelevant to me who's in the White House. I dislike all of them because they're all completely compromised and totally worthless human beings, in my opinion. And all their staff and all the cabinet members, going clear back. I can give you a list of every single compromised cabinet member in every single administration going back to FDR. How they were all coming from big corporations, and they brought their agenda with them to protect their corporate interest. And so exactly when was the last time we actually had a humanistic, let's say, normal populist person in a position of power? Name me that person. I'd like to know. You'd have to go back to Eugene Debs. And of course, they made sure he spent time in prison for his efforts. In any case, we're going to deal with this, because we are totally at the mercy now of the deep state that controls the political state, that controls the media state, that controls the administration of our laws. And that's not good. You know, there's some good things we can do. Let's talk about something positive we can do for this year that we all should do. Let's get on to the slow food bandwagon. And by the way, let's say thank you to Carlo Petrini in Italy in 1986. He founded that movement. You founded it. We're all on your shoulders, Carlo. Thank you. Why? Because this will help prevent the disappearance of local food cultures to counter the industrial agriculture domination. Today, the emphasis should be on food quality over quantity. And yet, with the new reset, you're going to see part of the new reset is all small businesses, they want to get rid of every small business. They want everything monopolized, and then they want all your purchasing be done online. More on the Great Reset. And by the way, I hope you had a chance to listen to the Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. I had on Catherine Austin Fitz on that, and she laid it all out as, well, there are two guests, but you can listen to that show. Also, educate yourself. Then educate yourself more and more. Take an interest and find enjoyment in learning about the dystopian efforts underway. Don't get emotional about it. Don't get angry. Violence, emotional or physical, does not change anything. It only harms. Positive thinking in a virtuous way is where we find solutions. When we think together in a positive way, bring our unique individual perspectives, and then we say, do we have strength when we hold hands and walk together? You bet we do. So when they come to your house in New York State, which they're going to do, I don't know how many of our audience called our state legislators yesterday to demand voting against that draconian law that would allow the governor to arrest you if you refuse vaccination and detain you indefinitely with no rights to you, none. The septic, corrupt system New York politics is just disgusting. But if you don't mind having that violation of your sanctity of your life and your choice, do nothing. It's coming. And it's come before. I said it and I will say it again, and I can stand on a historical record of accuracy. The United States today is no longer any way representing the United States of the past. We are Nazi Germany in 1936. We've moved up. I'll explain why later. So if you don't mind a government, a megamaniacal politician telling what to do, who's made nothing but mistakes and caused the death of thousands of people and not been held accountable, brags about his success when he has nothing but toe-tag corpses for that stupid move of putting COVID patients back into nursing homes and causing the other patients to become infected and die. Wow. And we accept that? That shows you how corrupt our entire body politic and the media supporting it is. In any case, educate yourself. Take an interest and find enjoyment in learning about what we don't know today. And then we can change the paradigm because we can stop supporting it. Don't buy into any ideology. Read between the lines to discover the hidden agendas of what you read. Remember, religion, whether the religion of theological faith or science, is believing other people's experiences, which leads to ideologies and stupidity. Spirituality, on the other hand, that I believe in, is discovering confirmation in your own experiences after proper scrutiny and investigation. So put spirituality first, and if you choose to have a religion behind it, good, but at least ask the hard questions. Develop sustainable habits. What do I mean? Simple. Save water. The average U.S. family uses 300 gallons per day, way too much. Try to get by on 50 gallons. You can do it. Go non-toxic at home. Use only eco-friendly products. You know, if within your financial means, green your energy and purchase energy-efficient appliances. Bank locally or publicly. Find socially responsible banking institutions or credit unions. Get away from all the big banks. Go organic in your eating as much as possible and reduce meat consumption or eliminate it ideally altogether. That includes chicken, all fish, and turkeys, pork, all that. Become very aware of conscientious recycling. Reuse or find other users for your products. Take the clothes that you're not going to wear, which is probably half, and take them to shelters that give out free clothes. The Daily Bread that I support does exactly that. And if you can, and I'm not saying this to people who cannot, but for many people in this audience, you're okay, you're well off. Try this. Buy a truck. Buy a truck, not a broken down, buy a truck, have it serviced, and then donate it. And then tell them where you want the proceeds to go. This year, I bought a truck and donated half the proceeds. When they sold the truck, went to feed homeless vets. The other went to a orphanage to feed and to take care of abandoned children. So if you can afford it, again, if you can't, understandable. But if you can, it's something that really can make a difference. Also, be conscientiously aware of your energy and utility bills and constantly find ways to reduce them. Reduce your transportation, especially driving. Use other healthier means like walking or biking. Do home or even indoor gardening. everyone can have an indoor herbal garden and/or sprout seeds into sprouts. What a wonderful way to get healthy. You're eating healthier. Sprouts are powerhouses of nutrition, have far more nutrition in it than, let's say, a full-grown. A baby leaf of lettuce is more powerful in its nutrition than a full-grown. And a sprout's even more powerful, and microgreens are even more powerful. And you could grow microgreens in a couple weeks, sprouts in a week, let's say 6 to 10 days, including sunflower sprouts, one of your most nutritious in fenugreek. And I'm going to show by example how to make your own bamboo tropical garden in your backyard and make it aromatic. So every night, lavender, lilac, honeysuckle, jasmine, wonderful aromas waft through the air and go in, and you can sit there and breathe them in and love it and have butterflies. And I'll show you how to be able to have a place for butterflies to exist, and indoor and outdoor, and have bees if your zoning allows. So not for honey, but for pollination. And so I'm filming this being done right now, and it's not expensive. I'll show you how to get it and where you buy your bamboo and how you make your gardens. So you can do all these things. If you live in an urban area, participate in local community gardens. Support organizations and groups that advocate for all of these things, because these all enhance the quality of our lives. Now, one of the things we're going to have an issue with is what the weather's like. As many of you know, I will be premiering in the near future, probably the next 6 weeks. We waited for a New York City movie theater and a California movie theater to open, but none did. So we're now planning on a worldwide premiere of Last Call for Tomorrow. And it is the most comprehensive, in-depth environmental film ever done. It's the most winning documentary in the world this year. And that's part of the reason, because when you see all the places that were filmed in Antarctica, the Arctic, the Sahara Desert, the jungles of Borneo, the destruction in the Chesapeake Bay from the hog farms runoff, the way we're not doing anything right, nothing we're doing right when it comes to commercial farming in the United States, and how that's denaturing the land, polluting the air, and causing bankruptcies. So it's a very comprehensive film. But we'll keep you in touch on that. But what should you know now, right now, today? Well, 2020 had the most extreme weather events ever recorded in the United States and worldwide. Between 1980 and 2019, the average number of annual events was almost 13.8 events per year. And then it went up to 2020 to 16. We're talking about major catastrophes throughout the world. The worst hurricane, Category 6. So we're talking about serious stuff. 2019 was the hottest year on record. 2020, the second hottest. The Arctic had all of its temperatures records broken. We actually had 100 degrees Fahrenheit in Siberia. We had 130 degrees in Death Valley. The ocean stratification, which means warming, has reached its fastest pace. The longer heat stays on ocean surface, the warmer the atmosphere above it. Also means that there is less carbon sequestering in the ocean's depths. And also, we had the most expensive year for weather events. It cost us $140 billion, not including the loss of human life, but just in what it did structurally. And also, we had the most wildfires in the world. Australian brush fire destroyed 20% of the country's forest, killing over 4 billion creatures. It just breaks your heart when you see that. When you see a little koala bear out on the road and people stop giving it water, and that fire circled the world. Florida alone had 120 daily warm day records. Catastrophic floods in China, India, and Pakistan. Record-breaking hurricane season in the Atlantic. Cyclone Amphen in the Bay of Bengal, locust swarms, an enormous crop destruction in East Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, extratropical wind storms. I'm talking about wind storms, unlike anything we've ever seen in Alex in the United Kingdom and also in continental Europe, the Sahara Desert storms that reach the Caribbean and the U.S. Middle West. I mean, these are the storms that will take the skin off your body if you're in them. Rare western thunderstorm. These are winds hundreds of miles long in our Great Plains, destroyed 10 million acres. And then we had bomb cyclones in the Dakotas. The good news is, so far the majority of studies indicate 2021 be a cooler year due to La Nina weather patterns, but still above the 1 degree Celsius pre-industrial threshold. Wetter in many parts of the world, but drier in the United States Southwest. So the states that were not sustainable are going to be even less sustainable. So that just gives you a forecast of what's coming. But remember, what you do by not eating meat, that helps reduce the carbon footprint. What you do by buying locally organic produce from farmers markets and supporting local farmers and food co-ops, that is important because it keeps you from buying something that was grown in Oregon and ship it to Louisiana when you can buy something from Louisiana. I'm Gary Knoll. We're always liking to share the best that we can. And by the way, just to show you why I don't trust any government agency, the USDA just moved to weaken the regulations over genetically modified animals. U.S. Department of Agriculture, according to GM Watch, has proposed that it take over the regulation of GM animals from the Food and Drug Administration. And agriculturist Sonny Perdue said this would provide GMO, quote, developers with a one-stop shop for their products at the USDA, end quote. That's an attempt to smooth the path to market genetically modified animals, including new gene-edited animals, by removing oversight by the FDA, as if the FDA was not corrupt itself. And by the way, the USDA is famously friendly to the agribusiness industry. They were the best friends of Monsanto, never found Monsanto did anything wrong. And so that's what we don't want. Remember, the salmon you're eating could very possibly be the GM Aqua Bounty salmon, and you don't want to be eating genetically engineered food. That's unfortunate, but that's happening, and it's, again, it doesn't matter which administration. They are all controlled by this. And one last thing, and I'm just going to share this, and we'll have a deeper discussion on this on another program. This is from SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory. This is Stanford University. They're developing a single-dose nanoparticle vaccine for COVID-19. Quote, before the pandemic, the lab of Stanford University biochemist Peter S. Kim focused on developing vaccines for HIV, Ebola, and pandemic influenza. But within days of closing their campus lab space as part of COVID-19 precautions, they turned their attention to a vaccine for SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Although the coronavirus was outside the lab's specific area of expertise, they and their collaborators have managed to construct and test a promising vaccine candidate. Now listen carefully. This is not conspiracy theory, it's from their own science. Quote, our goal is to make a single-shot vaccine that does not require a cold chain for storage or transport. If we're successful at doing it well, it should be cheap to make. That's according to the target population for a vaccine is low and middle-income countries. Quote, their vaccine detailed in a paper published January 5th in ACS's Central Science, a major peer-reviewed journal, contains, listen carefully, nanoparticles studded with the same proteins that comprise the virus's distinctive surface spikes. In addition to being the reason these are called coronaviruses, corona is Latin for crown. These spikes facilitate infection by infusing to a host cell and creating a passageway for the viral genome to enter and hijack the cell's machinery to produce more viruses. The spikes can also be used as antigens, which means their presence in the body is what can trigger an immune response. nanoparticle vaccines balance the effectiveness of viral vaccine-based vaccines with the safety and ease of production of subunit vaccines. Vaccines that use viruses to deliver the antigen are often more effective than viruses that contain only isolated parts of the virus. However, they can take longer to produce, need to be refrigerated, and are more likely to cause side effects. Nucleic acid vaccines like Pfizer's and Moderna, RNA vaccines that have recently been authorized for emergency use by the FDA, are even faster to produce than nanoparticle vaccines, but they are expensive to manufacture and may require multiple doses. Initial tests in mice suggest that the Stanford nanoparticle vaccine could produce COVID-19 immunity with just one dose. Okay. Now, question. It normally takes 7 to 20 years to create a vaccine and to test it, and at least 1 to 2 years to see what effects you're going to have that are not immediately shown but come later. Doesn't exist. Nanoparticles can be points of communication. They can communicate inside the body, meaning they have a genetically imprinted message of what they're going to do, and then they can also be communicating back. Why is it there is no mention of what that two-way communication could be? So you see, you're only told what they want you to know, and nothing more than that. For all of you who did not listen to Leah Stay's program, I don't know if it's too late, but contact your state legislators, tell them that you're not supporting Bill A416 in New York State. A416. That's the bill where you would have no choice. If you didn't agree to be vaccinated, they could detain you. In effect, they could arrest you. You would have no rights. All right? And oh, by the way, did I mention this? The World Health Organization and Anthony Fauci warns that the COVID-19 vaccines may not prevent infection and disease transmission. Well, if you're not aware of that, read Vaccine Reactions website, Barbara Lowe Fisher, one of the most respected people in the field. Quote, at a virtual press conference held by the World Health Organization on December 28, 2020, World Health Organization officials warn there is no guarantee that COVID-19 vaccines will prevent people from being infected with the SARS-CoV virus and transmitting it to other people. In a New Year's Day interview with Newsweek, Anthony Fauci, MD, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, reinforced the World Health Organization's admission that health officials do not know if COVID-19 vaccines prevent infections or if people can spread the virus to others after getting vaccinated. According to the U.S. and the World Health Organization officials, vaccinated people still need to be masked and social distance because they could be able to spread the new coronavirus to others without knowing. Well, hold on a second. Don't most people line up to get the vaccines with the impression, the idea, the belief that it's going to prevent them from being infected? Doesn't do any of that. All right? So, just sharing the backstory in all this. We're going to take a break now, come back, and Richard Gale and I are going to talk about something that is not discussed anywhere but is being done. That is book burning or the censoring of some of the most important pieces of literature, classical literature, by some of the greatest minds ever to live because they don't like it. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us. We will take on all the issues that are important. And for a lot of people, we are being told that there are certain books, certain articles, certain people today that we shouldn't pay attention to. Therefore, it is completely justified for Pacifica. I have to put Pacifica at the top of my list of utter hypocrites. I left. I walked off the air after 36 years on PFW because of censorship. I walked off the air at KPFK in Los Angeles because of the censorship and the draconian type of lack of freedom of speech that they have. In any case, now we have Facebook, Twitter, we have Wikipedia, we have Google, and we have the New York Times, Washington Post. All the media is engaged in some form of censorship. And then now we have school teachers saying, I don't like a book. We're going to get rid of all the books, and I'm proud of it. Richard Gale, nice to have you back. Tell us why we should all be concerned about people who believe that they should not be able to share as a teacher a book in a classroom with the students that all of us historically had grown up reading their work and seeing the benefit of that knowledge.
Yes, Gary. So if we look at, go back through history and we look at, it's a long history of book burning, book banning, destruction of libraries, destructions of houses of wisdom, universities. If we look at this, there, who conducts this, these kinds of destructive actions? We could go back. I think there are a couple models that we could see here. The first is really the first major historical book censorship and burning was occurred in China in the 3rd century BC with Emperor Huang Ti. And his belief was that if he could destroy all the documents in the kingdom, that it would begin his new reign. Okay? So in other words, it's like starting history over again. And this is if we go through what the Soviets did, after the Bolshevik Revolution and the purging of books, or if we look at what the Nazis did, where, you know, the Nazis, the massive book burning, and Goebbels, who's in charge of a lot of the destruction of libraries and banning and of books. He wrote that the old goes up in flames and the new shall be fashioned from the flame in our hearts. And so there is this, whenever we look at totalitarian mindsets, I'm not even speaking of a particular political agenda or political party, but people that hold totalitarian psychological views, there is this kind of hubris, you could say, of thinking that you are part of the destruction of the old and the creation of the new that you represent, you know. But what's actually happening and what we don't realize is that books carry civilization. You know, without books, history is silenced, and we can have no way of appreciating history or learning from history if there's the destruction of books, whether you agree with them or not. You know, John Milton, who, some of his books, you know, author of Paradise Lost, but he says, who kills a man kills a reasonable creature, but the person who destroys books kills reason itself. And the U.S. has a very, very long history of book banning. In fact, it was back in 1873, there was the Comstock Act. It was passed by Congress against books, but generally for lascivious content. And Anthony Comstock, who was the author of the Comstock Act, he called himself the weeder in God's garden. And he believed books were no more than breeders for brothels. But when you look at the books that were banned by the U.S. government back then, you had Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, Daniel Defoe's Moll Sanders, Voltaire's Candida, for a short period of time, Harriet Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin was banned throughout, you know, the Confederacy, of course. But it was also banned by, at Russian Tsar Nicholas I, who also banned Thomas Paine's Rights of Man. James Joyce Ulysses was banned for a long time in the U.S. Elmer Gantry, Lady Chatterley's Lover. The Grapes of Wrath was temporarily banned in some states. Allen Ginsberg's Howl and William Burroughs' Naked Lunch, Catcher in the Rye. And then if we go, I think the book burning and destruction of books really reached a peak by 1953. Of course, you had Joseph McCarthy ordering libraries to burn and destroy books, that anything that dealt with subversive content. But it reached a point where the American Library Association had to issue a formal statement, national statement, that defining the freedom to read. And then President Eisenhower even found himself delivering a commencement speech at Dartmouth College, imploring students, and he stated, told the students, don't join the book burners. Don't be afraid to go in your library and read every book. So there was times, 1948, there were burning comic books. The Binghamton, New York Board of Education proposed a book, the public book burning of textbooks, that whatever was viewed as being subversive. We had in 1956, the FDA went and burned, you know, all of Wilhelm Reich's books and papers. There were 6 tons of his books that were burned. There's a very long history of this in the U.S. And in more recent years, we've seen, Americans burning copies of the Quran. We can remember when the Beatles came on their tour in the United States in 1966, right? And all the Southern disc jockeys and Christian churches and the Ku Klux Klan were imploring these public burning of their records and magazines and Beatle memorabilia. More recently, we've seen Harry Potter books being burned in New Mexico, North Carolina, simply because J.K. Rowling made some, probably well-deserved derogatory comments towards Trump. One of the more famous kind of from a government level recent was the publication in 2010 of this book called The Operation Darkheart. People might remember this was a former military intelligence officer, Anthony Schaefer, who released a book about his experience in military intelligence in the Pentagon. As soon as the book hit the shelves, the Pentagon went and bought as many copies as they could off the shelves to destroy. Just not that long ago, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World was banned in the Southern Texas school district. And then there's some really silly ones, like, of all things, Melania Trump donated, many large packages of Dr. Seuss books across the country to school. She probably had a lot of them because it was probably one of the few books that Donald was capable of reading. But there were schools that were refusing these packages because they were calling the Dr. Seuss books, racist propaganda and with dangerous stereotypes. And, Winnie the Pooh is banned in China. So we're seeing this is there's a long history of this. It's not just Al-Qaeda and ISIS and the Nazis and, Communist China that are banning books. We have a very long history of this as well. And I think one of the things is that it represents a very regressive psychological mindset. Self-righteousness. And as you made that kind of comment before, earlier today, making a distinction between religious belief as opposed to spiritual, let's call it spiritual faith, faith in your own experience rather than just a belief. But there's this, it's very more often than not these kind of skewed, distorted belief systems that bring about the need to eradicate the thought, the thinking, the creativity of others. So this is not just a right-wing thing. We're seeing it. We saw it with this school teacher in Massachusetts who was able to get Homer's Odyssey banned, censored from her school system. But you have to think of the mindset of these people that are doing this, which is regressive and dangerous in and of itself.
I appreciate you sharing that with us, Richard. Thank you. I'll be doing a commentary on this on tomorrow's program, taking it a little further, because this is just a part of the malignancy of this woke culture, of the attacking people, attacking ideas, but not having the understanding of how much we've evolved and trying to wipe away all of our advances, all of our gains for all this time. It's sad, but we have to stand up. We're out of time, everyone, for today's program. I want to thank you for listening. And I'll play RFK's segment on Anthony Fauci on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day.